It's nearly noon and time for KMXT's Midday Report. Coming up on the Midday Report, a fishing vessel was taking on water yesterday on our west side and required rescuing. This is the last day that Senator Gary Stevens will have to be in suspense about his fate, as well as another handful of legislators in close contests. The Bering Sea Pollock Fleet had a surprise visitors. And we continue our series of essays from young documentarians. You're listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak City, where it's 58 degrees right now, mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, but look for some rain and wind tomorrow. Speaking of wind, mariners be aware, you also have fairly nice conditions today, but wind is on the way.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Thousands of civil rights activists are gathering in the nation's capital today to mark the 57th anniversary of the historic March on Washington. Yolanda Renee King, the granddaughter of the late Martin Luther King Jr., spoke on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the same place her grandfather delivered his iconic I Have a Dream speech in 1963.
He said that we must not forget the days of Montgomery. We must not forget the sit-ins movement. We must not forget the Freedom Rides, the Birmingham movement, and Selma. Papa King, we won't!
Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris joined the rally by video, paying tribute to the late civil rights leader John Lewis.
For Congressman Lewis, the brutal murder of Emmett Till is what shook loose the activist inside him. It was the start of a lifelong journey toward service and driving change.
Today's commitment march on Washington comes amid weeks of ongoing protests against racial injustice in cities across the nation. At least 10 people have died in Louisiana in the aftermath of Hurricane Laura. Residents along the U.S. Gulf Coast are assessing the widespread damage left behind by the storm. Aubrey Uhas from member station WWNO traveled to Lake Charles, one of the hardest hit areas.
I was driving on 90 West trying to get to Lake Charles from Lafayette when I reached a downed power line. Not even just the line, the entire tower blocking the road. So I'm sitting on the side of the road in a residential area off 90 West in Welsh, Louisiana, looking at some of the damage while some rain comes down. There were some folks outside doing cleanup, moving branches, but now the weather has turned. It's windy, it's dark, it's rainy.
Aubrey Uhas reporting. President Trump will hold a campaign rally in New Hampshire tonight. Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio reports attendees will be required to wear facial coverings.
New Hampshire requires masks for any gathering larger than 100 people, and the Trump campaign says it will supply face coverings for anyone who doesn't have one. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu says he'll greet the president when Air Force One lands in Manchester, but won't attend the rally because of concerns over being exposed to the coronavirus.
I don't know how big it is, but my guess it's going to be a lot of people, and when I try to avoid large crowds, to be honest.
New Hampshire was the first state Donald Trump won in the 2016 Republican primary. He narrowly lost it in the general election. A Republican hasn't carried the state in a presidential contest since 2000, but Trump's campaign is targeting it as a potential 2020 pickup. For NPR News, I'm Josh Rogers in Concord, New Hampshire.
Stocks are trading higher on Wall Street. The Dow was up 161 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The crew of the Lady Ashley, a Kodiak fishing boat, was rescued yesterday morning after she began taking on water off Cape Uyak. Another fishing boat, the Gloria J, issued a mayday call at about 5:49 yesterday morning. Melissa McKenzie, a public affairs specialist for the Coast Guard, said there were several Good Samaritan boats involved.
Good Samaritans assisted all four people aboard this fishing vessel once it began taking on water near Cape Uyak. They made it into their skiff and were rescued by another fishing vessel in the area.
And that vessel was the Steadfast, which took the crew from the Lady Ashley to Harvester Island. The Lady Ashley was beached at Uyak Bay. The Coast Guard's Marine Safety Detachment is investigating to find out why the boat suddenly began taking on water. It's on with the show for Kodiak's Comfish Alaska, but due to COVID-19, the trade show part of the annual event has been canceled. About 50% of the vendors said they were not planning to take part. Sarah Phillips, who organizes this fishing convention for the Kodiak Chamber, says Comfish Alaska will still take place, only online.
We know that the commercial fishing community relies on a lot of the information that they get through Comfish Alaska, and so we felt like it was important to still be able to offer the forums. Those typically revolve around politics, policies, and education.
The political debates, which focus only on fishery-related issues, are one of the favorite events at Comfish, and Phillips is working to stage a virtual debate between Senator Dan Sullivan and his challenger, Al Gross.
The only green light that we have from the candidates is the fact that they are very interested in being able to do the virtual debates. We have nothing solidly confirmed. We're going to continue planning, continue to do our outreach, and hope to be able to offer the debate.
Comfish Alaska 220 is set from September 17th to the 19th. The forums will be live streamed on both Comfish and Kodiak Chamber of Commerce Facebook pages. Today is the day of decision in Kodiak Senator Gary Stevens' bid for re-election. Yesterday, he expanded his lead over John Cox by 231 votes. On election night, Stevens trailed Cox by 69 votes. The Division of Elections is expected to count the remainder of the absentee ballots today, and there are quite a few left to be counted in Senate District P, which is made up of two House districts, 31 and 32. In District 31, which takes in Homer and South Kenai, 640 votes remain to be counted, as well as 83 questioned ballots. In District 32, which encompasses Kodiak, Cordova, and Seldovia, 881 absentee ballots are yet to be counted, along with 58 questioned ballots. Cox would have to win a sizable number of District 32 ballots in order to regain his lead. Some other incumbents have even closer races. Senator John Coghill of Fairbanks is trailing his opponent in the Republican primary, Robert Myers, by a mere 8 votes, and there are only 76 votes left to be counted in that race. On the House side, there's another semi-cliffhanger. Representative Steve Thompson of Fairbanks is ahead by just 37 votes, but only 19 votes remain to be counted there. In Nome, Representative Neil Foster is ahead by 41 votes, and there are about 141 votes left to count in that primary race. The Bering Sea Pollock fishing fleet was going about its business on Wednesday afternoon when it encountered something unusual, a flotilla of Russian military ships, along with at least one submarine. Steve Elliott captains the Vesterålen, one of a dozen or so trawlers that were fishing about 200 miles southwest of St. Lawrence Island. The American boats were all clustered densely within a few miles of each other, and it would have been easy for the Russians to go around, Elliott says, but they weren't interested. He describes the scene this way over his satellite phone.
There were three bigger vessels that were one right after another in a straight line, and they pretty much told us that they were not going to deviate from course and that we needed to be out of their way. They made that very clear.
Two more smaller support ships trailed behind, and one of them tried to convince Elliott to move. He says he told the Russians that he was in the middle of fishing and would rather not, and they ultimately steered around him. The Bering Sea Pollock fleet sometimes fishes not far from Russia, and it's not unusual for them to see the Russian Coast Guard or to hear Russian on the radio. But in the 3 decades he's been fishing, Elliott says he's never seen anything like what happened with the Russian military on Wednesday, which he says felt like something of a flex.
There were three bigger vessels.
I think everybody's jaws were dropped a little bit that this was kind of happening. For them to come right through the middle of us, it was almost like they were making a point, like we're not moving.
While the fishing fleet wasn't aware of it, the Russians were running pre-planned exercises that the American military knew about in advance, says the U.S. Coast Guard, through their spokesperson, Kip Wadlow. The exercises take place inside what's known as America's Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ, but that only reserves fishing rights to the U.S. vessels, and there's nothing stopping other ships from being there.
As far as vessel transit goes, if folks are out there sailing commercially, military, or otherwise, it's free for them to do so.
Officials at NORAD and the U.S. Northern Command say they're closely monitoring the submarine, but they note that the Russian activity is taking place in international waters well outside the U.S. territorial sea. Yesterday, we began a series of commentaries from a group of student interns from Kodiak who spent the last few weeks learning the craft of video storytelling. Their assignment? To document the impact of COVID-19 on their lives. The interns wrote essays in preparation for their documentaries. Today's essay is from James Beristoff, who will soon start the ninth grade. James wanted to explore his Aleutic heritage in his film, and he talks about how the pandemic gave him an appreciation of his culture.
I grew up barely knowing my Aleutic heritage. If I'm being honest, all I knew was that I was Aleutic, and that was it. That is until I visited a summer camp, Digafognak, that is located around Lipson Point in Afognak. You arrive to camp on boat. The camp was fun, and people who manage the camp tried to make it enjoyable. We got to learn about Aleutic culture through activities that we did, which was when I started to learn more about my culture for the first time. It was exciting to actually get to know the culture because I grew up not knowing about it. And it was an honor to be able to visit the camp and meet more people who are like me. It was unfortunate that I and others weren't able to visit this year in person because of COVID-19. I just thought it was a fun summer camp to visit and to learn about my history. But then it struck me, the Aleutic culture was basically wiped out, so the camp was trying to teach us about the culture in hopes that it is not forgotten and won't be lost in history. Now that COVID is here, I realized that diseases were a big part on how Aleutic people suffered in the past, and how important it is to protect our Aleutic communities and elders. Something else that I learned about the camp is that they call it Digafognak because it was once an archaeological dig site. We were trying to dig up artifacts to learn more about our culture. The culture was decimated, so we had to dig up artifacts from our own ancestors to learn about them. Can you imagine that? Another thing that surprised me was when I went on a trip with my family and friends. We visited the Smithsonian National Museum, and we saw Aleutic artifacts such as a coat made out of gut and a kayak. It was like seeing into a past that I didn't even know existed. This moment made me realize that we don't even have our own items from the past, and the museum knows more about the culture than I do. You can never be bored at Digafognak because of all of the activities you can do. These activities consist of kayaking, bonding with other people through board games, doing outside activities like tide pooling, beach walking, and going on swings. We also simply eat meals in the kitchen, take time in the day to learn the language, go on hikes to different places on the island, dance, and do our own Native Youth Olympics. My favorite Native Youth Olympics competition is seal hopping, where you basically go into a plank position, but with your hands in a half of a fist so your knuckles are on the ground instead of your palms, and then you hop to move forward. Digafognak is an amazing camp with amazing people where you will create a bond with the people and the camp. Even though it didn't happen in person because of COVID, this pandemic teaches us that culture is fragile, but we are also strong, and we can go through these tough times. I got the chance to talk with Tana Scholl, an Aleutic artist and educator, and she reminded me that humor is one of the core values we have as Aleutic people, and that humor is one of our many cultural values that can help us get through these challenging times.
That was James Beristoff, one of the interns from the Kodiak Culture and COVID-19 Virtual Documentary Internship Program. It's a partnership of the Alaska Community Foundation, the Charlotte Martin Foundation, the Kodiak History Museum, and Batanga Productions, along with Maria Asima and Sea Stories. There will be a virtual screening of the videos the student interns produced next Thursday, and you can take part via Zoom. Two people were killed in a mid-air plane crash in Fairbanks Thursday afternoon. Alaska state troopers report that a Piper Super Cub collided with a Cessna 172 over a gravel airstrip in West Fairbanks before 2 p.m. and that both aircraft crashed into the runway. They say the Cessna burst into flames and its pilot, 52-year-old Shane E. Bennett, was killed, along with a passenger whose name has not been released pending notification of next of kin. A second passenger in the Cessna, ID'd as a 40-year-old man, was extricated from the wreckage and taken to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital with life-threatening injuries. Troopers say the Super Cubs pilot, 72-year-old Larry D. Dalrymple of Fairbanks, was also seriously injured and is hospitalized. They say the NTSB has been notified about the crash and local FAA personnel are on the scene investigating the accident. The statistics are appalling. 30% of Alaska murder victims are Indigenous people, even though they are just 16% of the state's population. On Wednesday, federal authorities marked the start of a new effort to bring the perpetrators of those crimes to justice.
I am proud to announce the opening of the first cold case office in Alaska focused on missing and murdered American Indians and Alaska Natives.
That's Alaska Interior Secretary for Indian Affairs, Tara Sweeney, one of the dignitaries on hand for the ceremony. The new cold case office is one person, an agent from the Bureau of Indian Affairs Office of Justice Services. His name is Rick DeCora.
Right now, it's just a matter of developing the partnerships with the and realizing that the entities that are here have been doing this already, and I'm just going to be here to help in whatever form that I can.
300 Alaska Natives are in an FBI missing persons database. DeCora says he hasn't yet seen the list of cold cases to tackle.
I don't have access to it at this point. I'm getting my commission through the Alaska State Troopers and developing that. So at that point, I'll have access to their records.
Tammy Truitt-Giroux of the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center says she'd like to see a better communication between law enforcement and the families of missing women.
I don't know how many times I've had to make a call to law enforcement from a family that's called me from a village because their daughter came into town. They cannot find her. They can't get help from law enforcement. They won't listen to them.
The new cold case office within the BIA building in Anchorage is part of the Interior Department initiative. It's one of seven around the country. More than a dozen people from across coastal Alaska testified in support or offered suggestions on how to improve the state's ferry system. They also lamented the cost cutting that's led to breakdowns and long gaps in service.
Ferries were once the most reliable way to travel around Southeast, but now many of us opt for small planes because of so many ferry cancellations. Ferry ridership also dropped when it became prohibitively expensive to put a car on the ferry.
That was Shanna Donahue calling from Haines. The Alaska Marine Highway Reshaping Work Group held an open line for 3 hours on Wednesday afternoon. It's working under a September 30 deadline to make formal recommendations to the governor on the future of the ferry fleet. Many of the callers expressed well-worn sentiments that the Marine Highway is critical infrastructure for communities off the road system. Here's Carl Becker of Cordova in Prince William Sound.
We are not using the ferries for frivolous discretionary travel any more than the residents in Wasilla who drive to Anchorage.
There were also voices from the villages. Christina Dick says the state is losing potential revenue from Medicaid since unreliable schedules are forcing patients to fly to Juneau on small planes for medical appointments. but she says that's not always an option in Hoonah, where she lives and works.
We have a lot of patients that don't like to fly or have a fear of flying or medical conditions that prevent them from flying. So in order to be able to get to those medical appointments, they can't get there.
Callers from the edge of the system in the Aleutians chimed in on the importance of a ferry connection to Dutch Harbor. Travis Swangle phoned in to retell his last experience trying to fly home from Anchorage.
They basically kind of laughed us out of line when they saw our three large dog crates and all her luggage and everything, and we were able to see that the ferry was sitting in Kodiak and was going to sail that evening. So we quick jumped on a flight to Kodiak and was able to make the sailing and get home a few days later and actually beat people that were stuck in Anchorage still standing by, you know, by the hundreds trying to get on an airplane.
Others expressed support for breaking the Marine Highway off from the Department of Transportation. Proponents of reform say that would allow more long-term planning and insulate the management from political appointees. Others questioned whether that could lead to less transparency or would further harm its funding support from the legislature. The working group is holding a second round of testimony from 4 to 6 p.m. next Wednesday, September 2nd. It's also accepting written comments via email at dot.amhreshaping@alaska.gov.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska seafood processors get clobbered by extra COVID costs. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Alaska seafood processors are paying tens of millions of dollars extra to cover costs from the COVID pandemic, and for most, it's coming out of pocket. Intrafish Media has the first in-depth look at how costs for protective gear like masks and gloves, testing thermometers, extra staff to handle sanitizing demands, and modifying worker lines for social distancing are playing out in the seafood processing world. At Bristol Bay, for example, where around 13,000 workers from outside Alaska come to the bay to work on boats and in the plants, it's estimated that all major processors combined likely spent $30 to $40 million on COVID-related costs during the peak fishing months this summer. Processors covered extra costs for putting up employees in hotels and other 14-day quarantine sites. That alone added up to an additional $3,500 per worker. Seafood companies also paid for pricey charter flights to isolate workers from passengers on commercial planes. Most medium to larger processors had medical professionals on site for the duration. At a cost of $30,000 to $60,000, Intrafish cited testimony by Silver Bay CEO Cora Campbell at a U.S. Senate committee hearing. She told lawmakers, quote, "The industry is taking on these costs out of pocket. At the same time, we're facing severe disruption in key markets and multiple pre-COVID cost burdens." Campbell added, "While a fraction of these costs may be reimbursed, we face significant uncertainty because there's no specific congressional directive to support health and safety protocol costs for critical seafood supply chains. COVID prevention measures are not included so far in relief loans and funds." Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 34. Date issued 10 a.m. on August 26th. The issue at Bay section of the Afognak District, south of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape, will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Thursday, August 27th, and remain open until further notice. As previously announced, the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District will open for a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, August 26th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 26th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th in the following areas. In the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, August 27th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 29th in the following areas. In the Inner Ayakuluk and Outer Ayakuluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, waters will be open to stream terminus of Ayakuluk River, stream number 256201. In the Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Uganic Bay, sections of the Northwest Kodiak District and the Southeast Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Northwest Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District, the Big River, Hallow Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Dakovac Bay, Katmai, and Alinchak sections of the Mainland District, north of the latitude of Cape Kekernoy at 57 degrees, 43.5 north latitude, and the Eastside Kodiak District and the Northeast Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice. The Izua Bay section of the Afognak District, north of a latitude from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. And until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and the southwest Kodiak districts, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And it's the 28th day of August, Friday, year 2020. 62 degrees outside right now. It's expected to stay sunny for the rest of the day and be rainy tomorrow. Mariners, be aware, conditions aren't bad right now. South winds at 10 knots around the island. But Saturday through Monday, look for southwest winds 35 to 40 knots Saturday through Monday. The Morning Rotary's annual Kodiak Island Golf Championship, originally scheduled for this weekend, has been postponed due to the weather coming. The new dates for the tournament are Sunday, September 6th and Monday, September 7th. For more information, call contact Barry at 487-5323.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.